KUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
CBS News Brief. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says he will vote yes to advance the GOP funding bill to keep the government open, but says other Democrats may not follow.
I believe it is my job to make the best choice for the country, to minimize the harms to the American people. Therefore, I will vote to keep the government open and not shut it down.
President Trump plans to use the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 as part of his push against illegal immigration. CBS's Camila Montoya Galvez.
We are told by U.S. officials that the targeted group is expected to be suspected members of the Tren de Aragua prison gang, which is comprised mostly of Venezuelan nationals.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says that Russia agrees in principle with the U.S. ceasefire proposal with Ukraine, but the terms need to be worked out. He also says through an interpreter,
we are in favor of it, but there are nuances.
President Trump says he hopes Russia accepts the plan. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Badgers advance in the tournament. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers with a win today over Northwestern, 70-63 in the Big Ten tournament. The Badgers now advance to play UCLA tomorrow. John Tanjay after the game about what were some of the discussions at halftime.
We were just real with each other at halftime. We were like, hey, you know what? We made a couple of mistakes, but it's not going to be perfect. We got to rile together. We talked over scenarios and we talked over game plan that we wanted to adjust. And, you know, second half, and I really think we executed.
Tanjay with 18 points, 7 rebounds. Marquette with a win today, 89-87 at Madison Square Garden over Xavier. The Golden Eagles advance in the Big East tournament. NBA, a big game for the Bucks as they host the Lakers, but LeBron James has returned to L.A. to get more treatments for a left groin injury. He will not be playing tonight. NFL running back A.J. Dillon excited to be joining Philly in free agency, tweeting "Fly Eagles Fly." Dillon leaving the Packers for a one-year deal with the Eagles. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Earl Ingram.
Today we are seeing the largest number of humanitarian emergencies since after World War II. We should be expanding our life-saving aid programs, not shutting them down during this time of crisis. I don't care where they come from. They are human beings. We weren't even having this conversation before 7 weeks ago, before Donald Trump took office, before a monster took office.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Remember, Donald Trump said we're going to solve the deficit problem. Well, evidently, the first month in office, the budget deficits passed $1 trillion. We're nowhere close to near the end of the fiscal year yet, but already at $1 trillion. But remember, we got to make all these cuts. We're going to slash and burn, and that's going to bring it down. It actually went up. And this is what to expect. So while the EPA is canceling $20 billion in climate grants, you know, to help us deal with our environment, the Trump EPA is saying, no, we're gonna make pollution great again. And I then see, same day, Lee Zeldin, the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, announced that he's gonna overhaul the entire endangerment finding of 2009. You know, Barack Obama's stuff. It declared greenhouse gas a contributing threat to public health and human welfare under the Clean Air Act. And we've been doing this for a while. No, we want dirty air again. We want to pollute freely. And I loved the responses. It's our freedom to use any energy we want. It's our liberty to pollute at will. And I couldn't help think back to when I was a kid growing up in the 70s in Cleveland, where we had to watch the news at night to find out if we'd go out and play tomorrow, because the smog index, the pollution index, you know, I suffered horribly from asthma because the pollution was that bad. I think I talked about this not too long ago. You know, my son and I had the conversation about leaded gasoline. You know, the good old days when we put lead in gasoline so we didn't have to eat paint chips to get our daily supply of lead. We could just inhale it from the gas guzzlers in front of us. Yeah. Now, the weird part of this, weird part, while we're going the wrong way on climate and the wrong way at the EPA and the wrong way, well, in every other way possible, Elon Musk gets Donald Trump to buy a Tesla. Evidently, Trump on Tuesday bought a Tesla Model S from Elon. They had a big thing. Now, Trump didn't actually, I don't think he actually drove it. Presidents can't actually drive, just so you know. And I'm not saying Trump is you know, he can't drive. I don't think so. But presidents don't get to drive security reasons, mostly. We did see Joe Biden drive the F-150 Thunderbolt or the Lightning. We did see him do that, but that was on a closed track. I think Obama got to drive something around the lawn a couple of times. But, you know, here's the thing. He bought it because, and you got to love the argument. Evidently, Democrats and liberals are boycotting Tesla now. And Trump is like, well, you know, they're attacking and harming Elon, and they're doing harm to poor Elon and everything he stands for. You know, like Nazi salutes. So evidently, this is you know, virtual signaling now. This is the weird thing. This is the weird world we're in. Very bizarre. Trump buys an EV. Am I the only one who remembers he was kind of against the EVs? And all the red hats are, you know, especially the big diesel pickup truck EV kind of folks, are they going to now go out and buy EVs because, well, we got to prop up poor Elon? This is the rabbit hole, the weird place that we've fallen into. Very, very bizarre. But it was cute seeing Donald play with the Teslas. I was hoping for another one of those photo ops, like when he was in the truck, you know, him doing the weird kind of angry driver behind the steering wheel, angry curmudgeon behind the steering wheel look. Yeah, we're in a weird spot. But one thing that doesn't change is, the Republicans' fetish on tax cuts. Evidently, on Wednesday, the Senate Finance Committee Republicans got together, held a powwow. I guess it's happening. I guess it happened today, right? That they're getting together with Trump at the White House. Talk about the path forward for the tax fetish. Now, what's weird, the House Freedom Caucus fell right in line on the continuing resolution. Right in line. Well, except Thomas Massie. And they will, because they're afraid of Elon and the money. What's interesting, though, is no House Republicans are talking about the tax plan. Normally, it's all they can talk about. Normally, it's all they want to talk about is how they're gonna bring home the tax cuts. When we all know it's not going to trickle down to working people. It's not going to be there for you and me. There may be the crumb. Oh, we're not going to tax tips. Up to a certain point, knowing that the majority of tipped employees don't pay federal income tax anyway, because sadly, they don't earn enough. But when you have representatives like Utah Republican Blake Moore saying, you know, we're in a new phase. Everything's hypothetical, was hypothetical 3 months ago. Now, you know, and he said, look, I hope you're not finding anyone willing to talk. They are doing this very much behind closed doors in the smoke-filled back room without any Democrats. Now, weird thing. I seem to remember Republicans complaining that Democrats wouldn't work with them. They have a chance to be better, and they're not. I would argue they got real problems coming up because they don't have the votes to ram through their agenda, really. And I think once we get down the road, it all implodes except the chaos. And I think that's part of the plan. I think they know they're legislatively not going to get what they want. Maybe one big piece of legislation, and they better put everything in it. I do find it interesting that now the Republicans are against a debt ceiling when they've got to deal with one, and they're trying to make a massive one. They're trying to raise the debt ceiling by $4 trillion, which seems like an awful lot, something they were never willing to give anyone else. And for me, you just look at this and it's just more of the same. You know, while it's different chaos, it's different stories, it's all the same. It's how do we defund government? How do we starve the beast? How do we take from working people? How do we destroy programs that help working people? And how do we, more importantly than anything, line the wealthy pockets? They're firing workers like crazy. Tens of thousands across our government. And those are former Trump voters, former Biden voters, former Harris voters, former Trump voters again. These are people in communities across the country who are now feeling the pain. And how does Donald Trump feel about that? Well, evidently his latest response, as reported by Daily Beast, he didn't seem to care very much. Very little remorse about those people losing their jobs. He said, quote, I feel very badly, but many of them, they don't work at all. Many of them never showed up to work. Many of them never showed up to work. And you go, No, that's not how that goes. There is a chain of command. You know who comes to work, who does their work, and you know if there are people who don't. And if you don't get rid of those people through the process, because there is a due process, then that's on you. That's on management. That's on the government for not doing things right. And as I understand, there is a pretty large chain of command. What they're doing, though, and you got to give them credit, they're sticking to the message, something Democrats are not very good at doing. They stick to the message, even if it's a lie, and all lies. They stick to it. What's that thing? That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. This is it. Their story is all federal employees are lazy. We don't need any government. We don't need any government workers. We don't need any government programs. We just need to let the invisible hand, the free market, you know, run by a handful of puppet masters who are incredibly wealthy and don't pay their share of taxes. We need to give them more power. So when I see these things all put together, and it's a lot, it's easy to get down one rabbit hole and get lost. But when you start looking at the fact that this is a field of rabbit holes, and they are deep and interconnected, and they all come back to one place. More power for the wealthy, more power for Trump and Musk and his ilk, and less for working people. Less wages, less benefits, less opportunities for our kids, all of that. And that is the plan. They wrote it down. And they are simply doing exactly what they said they were going to do in that document that they said that they didn't. They didn't have anything to do with. Weird. So I want to hear your thoughts. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, is going to be here to share some thoughts on the all-out assault on public education and the Department of Education. Back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Tuesday, Elon and Trump, their education department announced they were firing more than 1,300 workers, basically gutting the Department of Education. You know, the people who manage our students' federal student loans, you know, the people who ensure all our kids get a fair shot. Yeah, them. The reality is Trump knows he can't dismantle the Department of Education without Congress, but they don't really care. This is about consolidating power. This is about more for them. And look, legal experts all agree this is unconstitutional, but Trump and Elon and the Doge ferrets and the GOP, they don't care about the rule of law. They see their chance to repeal the 20th century and also destroy public education. You know, get those poor kids back to work where they belong. Yeah, your kids and mine. Because they know too much education can spoil a child for work. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on and, well, how we stop it, I've asked Randy Weingarten to come share some thoughts. She's the president of the American Federation of Teachers, AFT. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course, Rick.
So what do you make of this? We're gutting, we're basically twittering the entire government, the Department of Education being the next part of Project 2025. What's this mean?
Well, it's abolition or evisceration by this time 2,000 cuts. You know, when I saw it yesterday, I called it cowardly because, you know, Donald Trump does virtually everything by signing an executive order that kind of shows his intent. He pulled that off last week when he was going to do that and instead forced Linda McMahon, you know, she's been on the job 5 days. So when they say, oh, we're doing this for efficiency, she doesn't, I mean, give her a break.
She doesn't know where the bathroom is.
It's not like, you know, she doesn't know which departments work, which departments don't work. And frankly, we all can be more efficient. I'm not saying that we can't, but when you cut half the staff, that's evisceration. That's not efficiency. And when you take like virtually all of the regional offices and all of the people who take complaints for discrimination and you fire them, then then how do you at the same breath say you are investigating 60 higher education institutions for anti-Semitism? That is, you know, whether or not that's weaponizing the investigation authority or not. But you basically are saying with one breath, we're going to do what the Department of Education is supposed to do, which is if you see discrimination and somebody raises it, they have an obligation to investigate it. That's part of the civil rights function that they have. And then at the second, and then the next day, you then fire all the people who are supposed to do that. So it is the same kind of herky-jerky that we're seeing in the economy, the same kind of chaos and confusion that we're seeing in the economy. And frankly, our kids deserve better. But let me say one more thing before you ask another question, Rick. Let me say this. Every American who has kids in public school, they know it's their local school board and then secondarily the state education department that basically runs schools in America. You and I have talked about that forever. The federal education department doesn't do curriculum. They actually have a group of supports that Congress has appropriated, passed legislation for. And what the department's job is to make sure that that poor kid in New York City or in Mississippi gets the money for reading specialists if that kid has reading issues. They get the money for lowering class size, for paraprofessionals, for after school programs, for summer school programs. This is what the bulk of the money that gets distributed by the Department of Education goes for. Services for young people to actually help them succeed, help them with opportunity. Services for kids with disabilities to help them actually level the playing field. So what they're doing is they're snatching these kind of services that help white kids and black kids and Asian kids and Latino kids, help disabled kids, help first kids who are going to college for the first in their generation, kids who are getting career tech ed and a school system can't afford the clean room or the machinery. That's what they're cutting. They're cutting direct services to children, to young adults. They're snatching their futures from them.
Yeah, I have a dear friend who he's disabled, and his daughter is disabled as well. And since you brought this up, you know, he's apoplectic over the fact that he fears that they're willing to cut them off and let them, you know, just languish and his daughter not be able to get the services and the educational exactly. help. And look, the fear is very real in the disabled community, because I've talked about this a couple of times and I've gotten a lot of response, and they keep going back to, you know, these folks keep reminding me, and I hate doing this, but it is what authoritarian governments do. It is what, you know, you go back to the 30s, you know, it was the most vulnerable first, the correct. Poor, the disabled. And this just seems to be the pathway, or am I making a false conclusion here?
No, I don't think you, I mean, I've been on your show where I've put my, you know, social studies teacher hat on and the right wing has a field day, but that is history shows us that, you know, when someone in power otherizes people, you know, creates this fear about the other, and then uses that fear as a justification to hurt the other, that is a tactic that authoritarians do. But what is bizarre here is that they are othering children. They're othering kids who are poor. Working class folk, you know, many working class folk, you know, start poor and get a good job and get decent benefits and take part in the American dream. A kid who's disabled, or a parent of a kid who's disabled, that was the fight we had in the 1970s to say, stop putting these kids in the basement. Stop forgetting about these kids. These kids are precious in God's eyes and in our eyes. Let's make sure we give them a shot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they are taking that shot away from people. That's what the department does. That's the funding. That's the $90 billion to $100 billion that this department, the smallest department in the government, even before these cuts, it was the smallest department in the government. It's taking that shot away from kids who have a right to succeed. They just need to level the playing field. They need to have equal opportunity. I'll say another way. If you're a rich kid, and God love you, if you're a rich kid, if your parents are rich, and you're having trouble in math, your parents could afford a tutor. But if you're a poor kid and your parents can't afford a tutor, you want to have that extra help in elementary school. If your parents are wealthy and you can afford pre-K, that's great. But if not, you want to have Head Start. So why are we not giving all kids an opportunity? Why are we consigning them to the wealth of their parents?
Well, is that not what, you know, in my view, and you don't have to come along, but in my view, that's part of this, making sure that poor kids get to work. You know, I did a research project years ago when I was in school, and, you know, there was a rich guy from the robber baron era who said, look, you know, too much education will spoil a child for work. We can't let them get too smart because they won't go into the mines and mills. And my view is, I look at someone like Elon Musk, who I believe thinks that we're already post-human, that robots and automation are the future, and don't care about people. I just see it in that kind of, this is the dividing line of the haves and the have-nots, that opportunity to have an education.
Look, I'm just going to focus on their behaviors as opposed to what's in their heads psychologically. I don't, you know, so for me, you're not wrong. This, you know, you've seen fascistic behavior, in years gone by. But I think what we have to do is fight and pull together the working class of America, the middle class of America, people who are aspiring but are going paycheck to paycheck. And we have to pull ourselves together to say, regardless of whether you voted for Harris or Trump or didn't vote at all, this ain't what we wanted.
Right.
We want a better life, not a worse life. And to your other point, yes, there are states like Arkansas who, at the same time as all of this is going on, have changed their child labor laws, and we got to fight that. So there's a lot of fight in us, but first we got to explain what's going on.
Yeah.
And what's going on here is it is directly shortchanging the kids in America, millions and millions of them, and we are fighting it.
You know, blue hat, green hat, red hat, no hat, it doesn't matter. It's all kids. And this is where I think there's an opportunity, and where I do have some hope, and where I think you guys are essential in getting this word out, because everybody I know, they love their kids' teacher, even if we're told over and over again that teachers are somehow bad. There's an opportunity to reach, I think, the Trump voter and say, look, is this what you voted for? Did you vote for an evisceration of our government and the opportunity for your children to get an education taken away? Is that what you wanted? Because a lot of redheaded folks are in my rural community. They will hold on to their local public school.
And what I would say is, I'm sure they didn't vote for this, but let's now get together. Whether you're blue or red, you know, whatever sports team you're on, let's get together and fight this, because we want to make sure your kids have real opportunity for the future. And I don't care if you're a Republican or Democrat, an independent, or don't, or hate politics or love politics. When it comes to our kids' future, we got to be together to fight for opportunity. And what Donald Trump is doing here, and Elon Musk in particular, is they are robbing. Elon Musk is robbing Peter to pay himself a tax cut.
And to have Trump go buy himself a Tesla, very bizarre to me. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because again, you know, these kind of cuts are, I think they're going to be real. I think they're going to be painful, and they are going to trickle down to your local school districts.
Yep.
And look, state budgets aren't going to be able to pick it up. Local budgets aren't going to be able to pick it up. This is one of those things where highlighting the reality is utmost important. What are you looking for? What do you, as an educator, what should we be watching out for?
So first, on March 4th, March for Our Kids, there were 2,000 actions across the country of people. Very local actions, walk-ins, teach-ins to schools, parents, kids, educators, civic leaders, rallies in state capitals, rallies in town town squares, all of which was about fighting for this money and not letting it go to Elon Musk for tax cuts. Don't rob Peter to pay for Elon Musk's tax cuts. And we fought all over the country, and we will continue to do that. But this is what I would say to people right now in rural areas in particular. Take a couple of your friends, go to your next school board meeting, and ask the school board, you know, in a nice way, so if we lose Title I or if we lose IDEA, sorry for the abbreviations, what does that mean in terms of our local school budget? And if we wanted to replace the services, like, you know, lowering class size or having summer programs or after school programs or, you know, or reading specialists or math specialists, if we want to have these things, what would it cost us? How much would it raise our taxes? Because I think what's also going on is this: starve the services, fire the people who can do it, and then say to communities, tough luck. If you want to have these services, you got to raise your own taxes.
Dig deep. Absolutely. Another just part of the privatization scheme. But Randy, I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the great work, and I look forward to hearing from you again real soon.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
Our good friend Randy Weingart. Want to hear your thoughts. Are you going to show up to one of your town hall meetings? Going to show up to one of the board meetings? I want to hear about it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
A new choice. Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. 540 WAUK. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the low 40s. A mix of sun and clouds tomorrow and breezy, highs in the low 60s. Some showers and storms tomorrow night that will mix in with snow Saturday and windy with falling temperatures. Sunday, sunny but colder, high low 40s. It's 42 right now.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
Tom from Monona. I love this one. He says, this is Tom. I like to rub my feet together and drink milk out of the cow. Listen, we'd all spoon ourselves if we could, just for some affection. But rubbing your feet together, as I mentioned last week, is the closest thing to self-cuddling. It's just a relaxing, and Tom wants to do that, apparently laying under the udder of a cow. That is the idea of a chill evening on Fat Tuesday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
We're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Monday, you had Elon Musk on with Larry Kudlow saying, hey, you know, that federal spending is all about entitlements. So you got to eliminate the big one, you know, that Social Security, that Medicare. I said, it's sort of $500 billion. He said, maybe $700 billion. That goes to you, working class folks. And then on Wednesday, we see the ProPublica piece. Another Trump yes man, just doing what I'm told. Evidently, Leland Dudek, acting commissioner of the Social Security Administration, was quoted as saying, the president wanted it, and I did it. And what could it be he's talking about? That's why I turned to Alex Lawson, executive director of Social Security Works, to find out maybe what could the acting commissioner be talking about that he did for Donald, Elon, and the Doge ferrets? Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
It's always my pleasure, Rick. And, you know, there's a lot, but what he's doing, what he's actually, you know, there's two really interesting things in that. One is what he's saying is I did crime because the president wanted it, right? I gave over all of the information, the data, that, you know, it would be a felony if you or I gave one person's or accessed one person's Social Security information without authorization, right? Well, to get that job, what Dudek did is he gave Elon Musk access to all the data when the former acting commissioner refused. And then, you know, she's pushed out. This guy's elevated over, you know, I can't remember the exact number, but something like 180 people with seniority over him, right? I mean, he's a nobody. He was actually a nobody in trouble before he did the crime. And gave Elon Musk what he wanted, which was access to the system to just bring a wrecking ball through. But Rick, I know you saw the other part, because he's trying to sort of have it both ways, right? He's trying to actually say, like, it wasn't me, it was the president who wanted to do the illegal stuff, and so I did it. But he's warning really straightforwardly in that the agency could collapse, right? And we've been hearing that not just in a ProPublica recording of him, in so many words, but he is also trying to wash his hands of what the Doge wrecking crew is doing, which what they're doing is destroying Social Security. There's a New York Times article out today, you know, that they're going to get rid of the 1-800 number. And they're like, yeah, just go into the office, 102-year-old Social Security recipient.
What office?
Right? Exactly. And you're like, you're closing the offices too. And they're like, yeah, that's true. Because we know what it all is, Rick. It's under the cover of chaos. They're destroying Social Security, and they're perpetrating the exact thing. We've talked about it on here so many times before. They kneecap the mailman. Then they complain that the mail is late. And then, oh, they remember they have a cousin in the private mail delivery business. And that's the whole game. So they're going to destroy Social Security, hand it over to Wall Street by hook or by crook. And right now they're succeeding. Elon Musk is wielding that chainsaw directly through the heart of Social Security. And, you know, as we've spoken before, much cooler heads than I are looking at this and saying there will be service interruptions. People will not get their checks. You know, for 15 years, I've been just berating people if they would fearmonger over Social Security, right? Because Democrats would want to fearmonger, because Republicans were always coming to cut benefits.
Absolutely. But
they, you know, if a Democrat would be like, you might not get your check. We were the ones who were like, do not say that, okay? Because you can't scare people about that, because it can kill people, right? Like it is that serious. So you can't scaremonger over whether your check is going to be there or not, because the guarantee is what makes Social Security Social Security. This is the first time in the 15 years that I've worked on it, and Nancy Altman, the president of Social Security, works, the first time in the 50 years that she's worked on it, where she says she does not think that people's future payments are guaranteed right now, that there will be service interruptions. And then, you know, what do you do if you don't get your check? Now there's no 800 number to call. Now you can't go to the office. So what are you supposed to do? And, you know, what Wall Street wants you to do is die. That's right. What the black hat broligarchs want. They want people to die. So that you know, they have more money to buy more golden yachts. Now, what we're saying at Social Security Works, we want people, don't panic, but be prepared. We want people to go to myssa.gov, sign up if you have to, go to your field office if it's still open. Just get your file that has how much money you are owed, and get a hard copy of that in your hands. Hold on to that, because even if they can break things now, that's what you're owed. And we might have to rebuild some things in the future, but that's what you're owed. Get that hard copy. And then your members of Congress are the people who are in charge. At the end of the day, the buck stops with them. If you're owed a federal benefit, you call your member of Congress and you tell them. First of all, you can tell him, like, back Elon Musk off of Social Security, get him out of the system, reverse the cuts that he's made. But also tell them they have a part of their office is called Constituent Services, both the Senate, both your senators and your member in the House, and start getting to know them, because if your benefits are interrupted, that's who you're going to call. You're going to call them, because they haven't left anyone else to call, Rick. And that's the goal, is to just remove Social Security, make it further and further away from the people so that it doesn't feel as real in our hands when they rip it out of our pockets, right? The goal is to paint this big lie. You know, there's all this fraud, there's not. And then at the same time, hack into this system that works really, really well and has for 89 years never missed a single payment. War, peace, boom, bust, health, pandemic, never missed a single payment, but it might not be able to hit every payment now because of Elon Musk. That's the world that we live in right now.
Yeah, and it wasn't hacked into. The system wasn't hacked into. Evidently, Leland Dudek gave them access to it, and they downloaded it. And look, I don't want Elon Musk and his little Doge ferrets having access to all that stuff, and you're right. It would be a felony for any one of us to get in and get one of those, let alone all of them. But, you know, your advice is excellent to get a hard copy, because now that you got these children having access to all this information, who knows what kind of chaos, who knows what kind of things they do to change stuff. So excellent advice. Now, the thing is also with the fact that, you know, maybe the checks won't come is the fact that new people signing up, it ain't happening. In fact, we have a mutual friend, Sarah Burris. She's a reporter over at Raw Story, who was telling me on Monday that her mother's been trying to sign up for Social Security and the phone just keeps a ringing. And there's nobody picking it up.
That's absolutely happening right now. Sorry, I don't even need to do this. But when I said hacked, I actually was making a motion with my hands that was a chainsaw. And I should have used a different word. What I meant is they've just sawed through this system. Like with a bit like. The way you would if you wanted to destroy something, right? Like recklessly destroying pieces of it so it can't function, which is why right now, Sarah Burris's mother, I don't know that specific situation, but we're getting inundated. And this is always the way it is, the people who get hurt the most are those who have the least power, right? Like they're the ones who get hurt first, hardest, right? So primarily right now we're talking about poor people with disabilities who are trying to work through this already ludicrously arduous process. And the way that they've sort of just with abandon sawed through the system, they've eliminated like whole offices and whole pieces of the bureaucracy where somebody might need, and when I say bureaucracy, what I mean are dedicated federal workers who understand and have been working in this system oftentimes for decades and who are now treated like the enemy, a ton of people are just leaving because it sucks to work there now, right? Like they're just under attack all the time and they qualify for retirement.
And so they don't want to wait for the hatchet to fall. They don't want to wait for the axe to fall. Look, there are massive layoffs going off at the Social Security Administration. Massive firings are happening specifically. And I agree with you 100% specifically to ensure that we get a bad view that we're willing. We're properly prepared for the privatization that's coming, because I'm seeing all the messaging and I'm sure you're seeing it as well. No, they're not trying to break the agency. They're just, they're just trying to make it work better. And privatization always works better, right?
Exactly. That's it is a three-step program. Kneecap the mailman. First, you break the system, right? First, you actively break the system. No one's picking up the phones, can't go to the office. After you've sort of turned people on it, then you really start complaining like, hey, man, this thing's not working. And you're like, you just broke it. And then the third, you're like, hey, by the way, I've got a cousin, you know, works on Wall Street and he can do this. It's just going to be worse and it's going to cost more money. you know, what a deal. Yeah. But the difference is somebody's going to get rich under that plan. And with Social Security, it doesn't benefit any one person, right? It doesn't make a billionaire. That's why Wall Street hates it. It just works for all of us. And we all pay in, and then it's there for us when we need it.
Yeah. No, it's a great anti-poverty program. It is it's that bottom line under all of our, it's that line, that net under our feet to make sure that when we get into our golden years, we don't have to choose between cat food and medicine. But, you know, the thing is, and I've gotten responses from people saying, well, you know, when we privatize it, you could have the choice to pay into it or invest in your own. We it's about choice, Alex. And if you choose not to pay into it, well, you know, it's not our fault that you didn't plan for your retirement. And it makes me question when I see responses like that. Are we ready as a country to watch people die on the streets? Are we willing to watch people without health care, without retirement savings? Are we willing to watch them wither and die in front of our eyes? And sadly, I believe a number of us are.
You know, I have two thoughts on that. They're the two parts. One is I think that there are large swaths of this country where people will actually be willing to see people in great distress, die on the streets or in, you know, like real bad situations.
We saw it during the pandemic.
And then I think that you have a lot of states, and the states that have by far the most people bring in the most money, right? I'm talking about like New York, California, right? With the states that actually drive the economy of the United States of America. I think that in those states, the answer is going to be like, no, of course not. No, we're going to step up and be the Americans that we are. But we know this because not expanding Medicaid kills tens of thousands of people a year. And you had dozens of Republican governors over those years who just did that, right? Just for politics. Tens of thousands of people dead for political power. So we know that politicians will do that. And we know sort of generally the shape of where that's going to happen. And, you know, it's the old Confederacy. So, yes, I think as they take a hacksaw to these federal programs, you're going to see some states step up. They're not going to be able to fill all of the gaps, but that is what I think is likely to happen in the short midterm. Just to talk really quickly, and your listeners I think know this, but maybe they don't, just Google Chile, the country, Social Security privatization, right? Just Google that and then read what happens. You can Google Estonia, Social Security privatization. Every time the same thing happens, there's no actual way of privatizing a Social Security system. All that happens is one person or a handful of them get incredibly rich. In Chile, it's literally the brother or family member of the guy Peña who still runs the privatization portfolio at Cato Institute. So like literally the guy who's in charge of pushing the policy here, his family member is the dude who became a billionaire when Chile privatized. What happens is for a little bit of time, you know, they're able to lie to people and be like, it's gonna be wonderful. You're gonna, the miracle of the market is going to be so amazing.
Yep.
And then, you know, a decade in, people are looking around and they're being like, hey, wait a minute, this is way worse. And then it just gets worse and worse and worse until they have to flip back to a pay-as-you-go system because there's no way you can actually do what they say. It's just looting. That's all they're doing is some cohort is going to get incredibly rich. Workers are going to get screwed. And then they're going to have to switch back to a pay-as-you-go system at some point. You probably recognize it's literally what happened with pensions, right? Like you used to have pensions And then they were like, hey, let's just imagine how much money you can make if you just let Wall Street have all of that and do 401ks. The rich made out, you know, like the rich. The workers got nothing and now have way less retirement security. Yeah. And a handful of billionaires on Wall Street got even more billionaires. No, got even more billions.
And we've created the largest billionaire class in the history of humanity because of our willingness to take lower wages, less health care, less opportunities. And show me one privatization scheme that has actually worked out as it was sold. I've been doing this nearly 20 years. No one has pointed out anything that we've privatized that worked out the way it was supposed to. So real quick, last question I've got. What's tomorrow's marching order then? Again, you said call the office. If you're on Social Security, call the office, get a hard copy of what you're owed. But for the rest of us who hopefully someday are going to be able to collect Social Security, what do we do as a mass?
I think the key is to get in the streets right now, Rick. I mean, something that we are talking about is there's some leadership. I'm seeing some leadership, but not enough out of Washington, D.C., which that doesn't surprise me because the people have to lead. Politicians are always lagging indicators. So, you know, set something up at your local Social Security office. First, get organized. You can go to socialsecurityworks.org. We can connect you with people on the ground locally. You don't ever have to do this on your own. In fact, you need to stand shoulder to shoulders with your community. But the workers who are under attack, the beneficiaries who are under attack, allies, and go to your office, then call your member of Congress and say, get down here and protect this Social Security office because they're coming after it and they're trying to close this office, my office, and hands off my Social Security office. And we're having dozens of events across the country and it really hits. It's really salient. So if you start this process, you know, get people located at a Social Security office, invite the politicians, then get the press there, get the story out there that Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, is destroying Social Security so that he can give himself and his billionaire buddies trillions of dollars in tax handouts, and that the people have to stand up and say, no, you're not taking my Social Security. No, you're not taking my Medicare. No, you're not taking my Medicaid. Hands off democracy. That's what we need to do.
Absolutely. Alex, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. SocialSecurityWorks.org, the website. Alex Lawson, thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. You gonna take him up on it? You gonna find your local Social Security office? Hope so. Want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day that United Auto Worker members won an 18.5-cent hourly raise after a 4-month strike against General Motors. After World War II, workers grew increasingly frustrated. The war years were a time of labor peace, as most unions agreed not to go out on strike in order to support the war production efforts. But during the war, as companies raked in profits, many workers felt that they were not receiving a fair share. Worse, wartime shortages saw the price of consumer goods skyrocket. A dollar simply could not stretch as far as it once had. After the war ended, the workers wanted to make up for the ground they felt they had lost during the conflict. A wave of strikes washed over the United States. Walter Reuther led the auto workers out on strike on November 21, 1945. Their demand was a 30% raise. Reuther publicly argued that General Motors could afford to pay the raise without raising the price of their cars. He urged the company to open its books so the public could see their finances. The UAW laid out its reasoning in a report entitled Purchasing Power for Prosperity. The strike wore on for more than 100 days, but the union had done a good job making its case to the public. Finally, General Motors agreed to a raise. as well as improved benefits, such as a better recognition of seniority and promotions and protections for the union members. The contract was seen as a huge step forward for organized labor to take a seat at the table with capital. The strike and its settlement solidified Reuther as the leader of the UAW and a powerful voice for workers. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I go back to, you know, privatization of Social Security would be a disaster for working class people. It's the one safety net that we've held on to over my lifetime. And look, if they get that, you're never going to retire. I know people, I'm gonna work till I die. That will ensure it. And I go back to this privatization thing. There's been nothing that we've privatized that worked out the way they sold it to us, whether it's water or sewer, it's turnpikes or parking authorities, regardless, the local swimming pool, no matter what it is that we used to do for ourselves, private interests have not done it better, cheaper, and more efficiently. They just haven't. They have made some rich people out of it, and in a lot of cases have then saddled we the tax base with a giant mess that then has to be cleaned up. And the whole privatization of pensions, for instance, you know, the whole move away from defined benefits to, you know, you can invest in yourself, these defined contribution plans were a huge boom for corporations because they pay you a couple of bucks and, you know, if it goes into account, Wall Street crashes, that's not their problem. Whereas if you had a defined benefit pension, like my grandparents did, you knew every month what you were getting. You combine that with a little bit of Social Security, a little bit of savings, you were able to lead a life of dignity and in your own home. And understand, if we destroy Social Security, what Alex said was really important. The people who are going to struggle the most are going to be the most vulnerable, as they always are. The people who don't have the resources to fight back, don't have the physical ability to fight back. You know, the poor, the elderly, the disabled. You know, I've got a friend who's disabled, and he's literally losing his mind over the fact that he fears they're going to take what very little Social Security he gets, what very little health care benefits that he gets that help him survive. I go back to, and I hate to compare eras with the Hitler era, but remember, this all follows a path line. And when you go after the most vulnerable, when you become a society that's willing to kick people when they're down, when you're willing to punch down, when you're willing to, and like I said, you're willing to watch people die in front of you and do nothing, I have a problem with that. I think most decent Americans do. Because I don't think we're that country yet. But there's a large number of us, and we know who they are. They were the people who were out there rallying during the pandemic. They were having the parties to get people sick. They were the employers who were betting on how many of their workers they could get sick. Yeah, there are some sick, evil people out there. But for the mass of us, the good, decent, honest folks who just want to make a living, and do that with dignity and respect, we've got to pay attention and get involved. I think what Alex said is a great idea. Call your Social Security office. Get a hard copy of your benefits if you're collecting right now. Even if you're not, get your hard copy. Make sure that it doesn't disappear, because we don't know now. This is, you know, as Alex pointed out, this is a weird moment, because you always had the full faith credit of the federal government backing this stuff up. Now that you got a bunch of kids, once you got the ferrets, the Doge ferrets in there, you know, rooting around, what chaos, what destruction could they cause? I'll tell you, it's got me concerned. And it should have you as well. And he's right. Call your member of Congress. Get active, get engaged, and don't turn away. You know, we've got to go through this pain and suffering. We've got to go through this agony. We've got to go through this together and help each other, because that is going to make us stronger on the other side. It's that organizing. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Grab the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. You'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The Trump Justice Department is asking for immediate relief from the Supreme Court in order to implement the Trump plan ending birthright citizenship. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
Three federal district judges from Washington, Maryland, and Massachusetts placed injunctions on the enforcement of the executive order to end birthright citizenship for undocumented immigrants. Appeals courts have upheld those rulings. Many legal experts believe that the president's reading of the 14th Amendment's birthright citizenship clause is a Hail Mary.
The 14th Amendment says anyone born in the U.S. is automatically a citizen, but Trump has vowed to make legal arguments against that idea. President Trump's trade tariffs have sparked international backlash. CBS's Linda Kenyon.
While Canada threatens retaliatory tariffs, so does Europe, now that the president has threatened 200% tariffs on wine, champagne, and spirits.